And that's a big finish. That's Nina Simone, Revolution, which would have been the background music for Carlos and Tommy Smith and that whole movement that grew out of the Salute. And again, John Carlos will be at the Innes College at 2 Sussex, March 2nd, 6:30 p.m. And there will be a showing of Salute. And you can go to salutethemovie.com. But make sure you make it for March the 2nd, 6:30. And also in Hamilton on Wednesday the 25th, 24 Main Street, 7 p.m., Zafar Bengash and myself, this is Phil Taylor, CIET 89.5, and we are going to be talking about The American Sniper, the film which has had started, let's call it a culture war, very important matter, and we've tried to address it on this program. I know Zafar is very concerned. There's a, it is an ugly moment, you might say, in American culture, but I didn't have a lot of pretty ones. So that's going to be at Hamilton. It's going to be at 7 p.m. Wednesday, 25th, 24 Main Street at the New Vision United Church. I'm going to even have something to say about Christians. I know there's a lot of talk about Muslims, but Christians, an important matter, too, to take up, and particularly in relation to this film. But we'll come back with more news about that. But I believe we're joined now by Robin Philpott. Are you there?
Hi, Phil.
By the way, Robin is the publisher of Baraka Books. He's quite a well-known journalist. He's written a number of books himself. But, Robin, you have taken up the issue and congratulations, because I haven't seen the mainstream media discussing a rather famous mainstream journalist who has just passed away recently, but who had written a memoir, which is in some ways, I guess, is a confessional memoir.
Yeah.
Tell us, what is this, the significance? What's in that memoir that should draw our attention?
Well, I've read excerpts. It came out about a week or two ago. The guy's name is Roger Oak, and he was a regular correspondent for CBC Radio-Canada, the French section of CBC, mm-hmm. throughout the years of 2000. He was also a correspondent for La Presse, which is the major French-language daily, but he was working for Swiss TV, French-language TV. He was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been taken hostage in the 80s, but his story, what he did is he died of at the age of 58 of a brain tumor last September, but he'd written memoirs with another man, and they came out 2 weeks ago, and the main story, there's a lot of gossip in there, but the main story about it is that from 1989, he says, he was working for the Mossad, the Israeli Civil Service, and he was also working for the CIA. He talks about meetings at the Pentagon and elsewhere in Washington, and he was working for French Secret Service. Now, this is 1989. He says he was recruited. Other people say that he was working for them all along. When he started back in 76, he, in fact, fought with the Falange in the first Lebanese Civil War. And then in his book, he said they were fascists. Mm-hmm. But he was definitely in the right-wing movement, and then he became a journalist. Whether he was already a Secret Service man from, you know, working for these Secret Service information intelligence operations, we only know that, and he says, from 89. And
yeah.
In it, he says, for instance, that he was doing undercover work in Syria under the disguise of journalists to carry out, what he said, coups, carry out events or operations in Syria for the Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very serious thing, and so far, what I wanted to draw attention, wrote it in a French language article and has been picked up elsewhere, is that nobody here wants to talk about it.
When you say that, I guess his death must have been noted.
It was.
But
Radio Canada.
But that was not mentioned.
And this has not been mentioned by them. And I asked another journalist who follows this very closely today at a radio program, and he said, no, he hasn't seen it anywhere, nor has La Presse, for which this journalist worked for many years and was also a foreign correspondent, this man who was interviewed, and La Presse has just said nothing about it. So they haven't even reported on it. So there is something, you know, what you have to say is, are they, do they just think this is just normal? And if they do, then they're yes. threatening the lives of every one of their correspondents. And they're also, yes. in a sense, admitting that some of the information could be just press releases coming out of some foreign secret service, or even, for that matter, Canadian secret service.
Yes.
You know, it's a very serious question, which what my feeling is that the people don't want to talk about it in the media.
Yes, well, incidentally, if there's one thing the media doesn't like to talk about is itself. I mean, they don't
right.
mind, you know, going through somebody else's garbage and trying to find old letters. But if you say, well, what about this guy? They don't want to speak. But this is quite serious. Let's mention the Church Committee in the United States. When they had
right.
their political meltdown called the Watergate, mm-hmm. It became a big matter to know where American agents were functioning, and my memory is that Senator Church led a fight in which he said, you have to swear that you will not put agents into the media.
Right.
And exactly. they did that. They agreed. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And
that
policy apparently has been breached or changed.
Well, you put me on this field when we were talking about this at an earlier time, but then I went and found out that the Church Committee examined the FBI and the CIA in the mid-70s, 75, 76. It was a Democrat from Idaho. They had hearings, senatorial hearings, and they described how throughout the 60s and early 70s, the CIA and the FBI had operated in the anti-war movement, against the anti-war movement, against the black liberation and civil rights movements. And they described it was so shocking that the CIA adopted a regulation in 1977 saying that they could not recruit journalists as information officers, as, you know, as spies,
yes.
as agents. Mm-hmm. And they did manage to maintain a certain, what they did it secretly, but officially they said we couldn't do this. And this
it's rather important, you know, yes, laws will be mm-hmm. breached, but it's important to have a law.
Right, and to say, well, this is, you know, this is not to be done, and the media themselves did not want that to happen because they knew the dangers of it for their credibility, and they knew the dangers of it for their other,
yes.
for their, their other reporters. And
yes.
You know, and what they do is they give credence to the idea that many liberation movements have is that every second one of those foreign correspondents is an agent.
Well, yes, indeed. It raises the matter. I know that the University of California professor who manages a site called The Angry Arab
right.
was pointing out that at the time he was taken hostage, there were allegations that he was a spy at that moment.
Right.
And, of course, we were all told that he was not. And that's, as you pointed out, this is the dangerous part. Media has to be responsible and say, we will not employ somebody who is a hireling. And incidentally, this is money. We have to, my understanding about his motives, there was nothing honorable about it. It was all to do, he said he had a very expensive lifestyle and he needed the money.
Yeah, and a journalist's income, even if it were from Paris, does not allow to maintain his lifestyle. So he was doing it for money, so he would do anything.
Yeah.
Just one other thing about the media is that if our media are to be taken seriously, they have to demand that the Canadian government, the American government, the French government not do that, because it's up to the government to say we forbid that
yes.
of our CSIS or our CIA or something.
Yes.
And their silence is very damning for this media, and it makes you come back to the idea that the first victim of war is the truth, because they are prepared to accept it. If they don't say anything, they must be prepared to accept it. Yeah. That's all I can, you know.
Well, you know, by the way, I mean, I feel sometimes like maybe we're talking about gangsters, and, you know, the way they used to catch a gangster was not to get him for his crimes, but for his not paying taxes and all the extra money he had.
Right.
And here you got a guy with double income.
Right.
And somebody ought to know that.
Right.
He's taking in a lot of... By the way, one thing I guess he didn't tell us in his confession is how much he's being paid.
Right. But he did say that the Israelis paid more than the French. He did say that. And, of course, he was very... he said this is my... the shady side of my personality. That's called understatement, I would say. I don't want to... And this is something that came out on the Angry Arab website from a book by Soha Beshara. Soha Beshara was held in prison, Israeli prisons, for 10 years. She was a Lebanese communist. And she described, and this book came out, she wrote this book in May 2014, where she lambastes this guy, Roger Ouk, and describes how the man was operating, because he managed to get an interview with her in this Qiyam prison, it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And he got his interview, but of course, he didn't do anything. He wanted her to sign something about calling for certain selective release of hostages, and she refused to it. But then he wrote in his own articles that she did say these things. In other words, you can see. I mean, she was just furious, and of course, at that point, it was not public knowledge that he was an agent. I mean, it's on the. It's a translation of an excerpt from her book, but the book came out last May, a year ago.
I would really urge people go to the Angry Arab and follow this discussion, because she's a very conscientious person. She pointed out that that she thought it was suspicious that a journalist manages to come and see her and get in, and the authorities allowed that. And so she understood something was going on. But, of course, he represented himself as only a journalist.
Right. And he also, in order, and then she, one of the things they negotiated she would write letters. And, of course, she describes her letter that she sent to the Communist Party. And, of course, she talked about the importance of pursuing what she had been arrested for, which was fighting against the occupation in southern Lebanon. But, you know, that article helps you understand how dangerous and what these people who are going to be disguised as journalists, but they are in fact agents, what that means for people.
Yeah, in my opinion, we should hold their feet to the fire, as it were. Not that anybody's got a hold of their feet or managed to set up a fire, but, you know, there used to be media organizations. And my guess is that in their constitutions and their pledges of allegiance to truth and freedom is that they say they're not going to be anybody's propagandist. They should be asked, well, what about this gentleman? And why not a review? When did he work? What did he tell the Canadian people while receiving money from three intelligence agencies?
Right.
Incidentally, I'm sure, given his self-description as something of a playboy and a wise guy, some of that he probably manipulated to suit himself.
Sure.
One of the things that happened there, I want our listeners to think about, is that the woman that you speak of, who happened to be at that time in a dangerous situation, a prisoner, isolated, he misrepresented what she told him.
Yeah,
she said later she read what he wrote, and he had misrepresented what she had said.
Yeah, and he also
putting her life at risk.
Right, and also she said he would never. She'd never been tortured, which she had been for weeks. She had all the proof of it. So what he did is he wrote an article about it. It's called, and the article was, the title was "Portrait of a Murderess," and he just, you know, it made the Israelis look very nice.
Yeah.
And, of course, I mean, this is what agents are paid to do. But the worst thing, I mean, I've been terribly insulted, because I used to listen to the guy. I thought he sounded suspicious. Mm-hmm. That's what I say now. we feel that we were suspicious. But if we had said this guy looks sounds like an agent, we would have been accused of being a conspirationist.
Yeah. A conspiratorial,
conspiratorial theory.
Though, by the way, and it ought to be a truism that everybody's always suspicious of the other nation's journalists, but they're never suspicious of their own.
Exactly.
But we're talking about a situation where today, 2015, there is journalists are a high rate of loss of life and endangerment and in captivity.
Right.
And this is not a time for the Canadian media to fall silent when a man says he used to work for them and
right.
then also for foreign intelligence agencies.
Right.
And by the way, bless his heart, he was in his dying days, he decided to tell us. And by the way, if they think it's false, let them say, no, he made that up. But somebody better explain how this occurred. And incidentally, my reading from the Angry Arab site, and mm-hmm. again, that's a very distinguished professor. And that man mm-hmm. really knows his stuff.
Right.
He has treated this matter and he pointed out that he received a rather big job. He became Sarkozy's ambassador.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that. Yeah, he was tired of being a journalist because I think his people must have started suspecting it too much. So he wanted to go into politics, and so he contacted Sarkozy, who he knew, who was president then. This is in 2008, and Sarkozy then appointed him as. He said, no, you should be an ambassador. You know, we agree on all these things. So they appointed him as an ambassador to Eritrea. And that's where he was until he fell sick.
A sensitive post.
A sensitive post. And as somebody pointed out also on the Angry Arab site is, what is this? Did Sarkozy know that he was an agent of the Mossad and the CIA? Mm-hmm. I mean, did he know that when he pointed
or French intelligence. My understanding is they don't, their reputation is that they don't appoint former intelligence people to these. That's the claim. Whether that's so or not, I don't know. But that's the speculation. That's just one of those things that not to be done. Incidentally, the U.S. only in modern history, in recent decades, changed its policy to appointing people with CIA backgrounds. It was a time when if you had been CIA, you couldn't get a diplomatic post. One last thing, rather sensational. He has been also apparently identified as the father of the Marie Le Pen's granddaughter.
Yeah, Jean-Marie Le Pen had at least two daughters. One is now head of the National Front, Marine Le Pen. Mm-hmm. And his other daughter was named Yann Le Pen, and they had an affair in 89, apparently, and so she has a child. The interesting point, of course, is that that child is now a member of the French National Assembly, mm-hmm. One of the few for the National Front,
mm-hmm.
and it is the daughter of Roger Ouk. In other words, he was hanging around in the late 80s, very close with the National Front, an extreme right-wing organization.
Very close, one might say. Last question, very quick one. Has the French media, to your knowledge, taken up this issue of his memoir?
Oh, yeah, it's been in the French media, but I can't say that I've seen editorials. There's a lot of people talk about it,
mm-hmm.
and often the people are sort of more interested in the gossip than about his ties with the Le Pen family.
Yes,
which is sort of neither.
So they're as prone to the gossip approach as American media.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, exactly.
Well, we want to stay with this one.
Yeah, I'm glad to see you're picking it up because I found for a while I've been talking about it on my radio program for a couple of weeks. Finally, I got a couple of articles published in it, I've asked a number of journalists to comment. I mean, these are big journalists here, and some of them say, "Well, I haven't read the memoir."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the point is, you can find excerpts and enough information, even if you haven't read the memoir yet.
Yes,
the excerpts about his agent.
All we need to know is that he did claim clearly and loudly that he was working as a journalist, but actually also for at least three intelligence organizations.
And then you have to ask
those media who employed him should have to account for that, what they think of it, how they're going to protect us in the future from that kind of behavior.
And journalist associations, the Quebec Federation of Professional Journalists, Mark noted his death last night with a press release and everything, and they've remained silent so far, which is it's troublesome because they have to think about their own lives as well.
It endangers everybody because anyone who's been taken hostage, a journalist, and they say to you, oh, you're a spy, and you say, oh, no, of course not. They say, well, look, you want to see this guy? He said he wasn't. He seems to be the same kind of fellow you are. I mean, that's exactly why it should not be. Self-respecting journalists ought to say to the people they call spooks, hey,
right.
Get out of the business. You be a spy on your own time, but don't pretend you're a journalist. Robin, I got to go, but thank you very, very much. It's very, very informative, and we're going to keep on asking these questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Data Report, CIT 89.5 FM. We're going to be talking, we hope, shortly with Portia Karagea about an assassination that took place in South Africa.